Welcome to the Marriage Adventure Podcast, where the journey is the destination. It's the highs, the lows, and everything in between. What's up, everybody? It's so great to be with you guys this week. We're your hosts, Daniel and Bonnie Hoover.
Hey, hope you're having a good week.
And it has been an incredibly busy week for us. We're recording this, and it's the rainiest February we've ever had in the history of time. But today it's beautiful and it's sunny, and today we've gotten to unwind and spend some time here at a beautiful, beautiful ranch called Birdhouse Ministries.
And today we are blessed to be joined by two very special guests who have a tremendous heart for marriages. And if you're a baseball fan like our family is, then you will recognize the name of one of our special guests today. Paul Byrd is a former MLB pitcher, a best-selling author, and Emmy Award-winning broadcaster for Fox Sports for the Atlanta Braves. And my kids love watching the Braves, and part of it's because they love seeing him on there. And today is an honor. Also, we're joined by his wife, Kimberly. And Kimberly is certified in life coaching, and her passion to invest in the health of marriages led her to pilot the Strong Marriages in Sports Research Project. And they studied marriages of 100 MLB players and their wives.
So, Paul, before we get going, we have to hear you say your signature line, bring the heat.
You got to bring the heat.
There you go.
Yeah,
there it is. They've been married for 25 years, and they have two grown sons, Grayson and Colby, and they feel a calling on their lives, and we're so excited to talk to you guys today about your passion and your heart for marriages, and so we're really honored to talk to you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having us here today. We've gotten a chance to just kind of look around. This is just a beautiful place, and what you guys have done. I can't wait to share with people listening a little bit about that later, but Paul, you spent 19 years pitching in the major leagues. That is a tough place for marriages, but you guys have survived it. Tell us a little bit about how you guys met and some of your journey.
I'll let you go first.
Well, I appreciate that. So I played 19 years, 14 in the big leagues, and that resulted in us moving over 56 times when I was married.
Good,
so that's one
gracious.
Of the big stressors on a marriage. Change of job is a stressor. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of that. And so for my wife in Louisiana, I met her at LSU, and the Lord was just so gracious for connecting our paths. And I knew quickly that she was the one for me. And I don't want to speak for her, but unless she's lying, she said that happened for her quickly,
very
too.
Very quickly.
Yeah, so we were at a Mexican restaurant on our first date, and the only time my eyes left her, it was almost too intense, like I was a stalker, was I just dipped, you know, the chips in the salsa. Kurt Schilling, my teammate-to-be, was pitching in the background for Philadelphia in the World Series, and I knew when I didn't want to check the game, and I didn't care of the score, and I didn't care how Kurt Schilling was pitching,
you knew
I knew something
was
up. God was moving, and there was bigger things, or things that were more important than baseball, and marriage was one of them, and that was a big sign for me.
Yeah, and I think I went on that date very skeptical because I was in a really good place with God, and I didn't want to be disrupted in any way. So I had a list of qualifications of what I had expectations of. If he doesn't meet these requirements, then it's done. I'll give him one date and that's it.
And it was basically Jesus.
It was. I needed a champion, yeah. So I went with that mindset, and also kind of tested him. Like, I sat pretty much where my head was right in front of the television. So just to kind of see, like, how interested is he and how engaged. And he passed everyone, even the harder questions. So I knew that I was in trouble at that point.
Kim, were you a baseball fan?
No, I am now. I am now. I've grown to be one. I didn't grow up with baseball. And actually, there was a funny story with it when we first dated. I mean, you'll do better justice of the story, but he was like, you know, I've got to practice. I've got to go and, throw an inning or two with LSU.
Yeah, throwing in a scrimmage at LSU.
Yeah.
And you want me to finish
the
story, I can
story.
Tell.
Yeah.
So anyways, I went out and I'm throwing, and I get out of the inning on four pitches. So ground ball out, foul ball off the screen. This is the kind of memory you develop as a pitcher, ground ball out. So I only could have done one pitch better, which never happens. So I walk off to the side. I'm real proud of myself. I'm taking my cleats off on the bleachers, you know, 20 minutes later. And she said, "I'm so sorry." And I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "Well, I hope I didn't mess you up being here." And I said,
"This was sincere, you guys."
No, I could have only done, you know, one pitch better. I actually did well. And she said, "Well, I'm so confused because I thought when you threw the ball, they were supposed to swing and miss. They hit every pitch you threw." I'm like, "Oh, man, we got some work to do."
I think I had been to maybe one game in my lifetime. And even when we dated, I was like, "What is your era? What is this era thing? My ERA?"
I
just didn't know. Yeah. I had no idea what I was in for. And unfortunately, I was at LSU when they won the College World Series. It was this big deal, but I just wasn't in my world. So we laughed because we were there at the same time when that was going on, but it was just not in my radar.
Had no idea.
I had no idea that I was going to have a crown of glory to throw at Jesus's feet for sitting at the most baseball games, for sure. Yeah. Like, at least the most at this point, you know.
Yep. And when your son asked me the question about the hot dog, which we will hear later, versus nachos, she is well versed, and she judges baseball parks based on the food that they have. So
I'm a nacho lover.
That's very, very important.
Maybe one hot dog a year, and I'm like, I'm done. I'm good. I'm good.
There's nothing better than going to SunTrust. Well, now it's something different.
Truist.
Get used to that and getting the foot long.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
it's just great.
Yep.
And he pulls that on me now. He's like, "I'll take you to Costco for a date, get you a hot dog." Nah. I'm like,
that's highfalutin.
No. I mean, if you throw in a nothing bunt cakes, maybe. Like, maybe, you can stop there across the street. But the hot dog, no.
Well, we're going to dig into this relationship a little bit more. But every once in a while, you get a classic interview with two major baseball personalities, and we're going to jump to that real quick.
All right, this is called Lightning Round. I'm going to ask you some questions, and you're going to answer as many of them as you can in 2 minutes.
I'm ready to go. Sounds fast.
When you're at a game, do you prefer a hot dog or nachos?
Oh, easy question for me. Hot dog. Ketchup, mustard, and relish. How about you? What do you take on your dog?
Nacho.
You go with nachos. Well, you'd be wrong, but we're just going to let that go.
What was your favorite stadium to play at?
Oh, my goodness. My favorite stadium to play at was Seattle because I'm a pitcher. They had a huge outfield. There was water coming off Puget Sound, and so I'm a fly ball guy. When I gave up fly balls, they would usually die in the outfield. Number one for me, Seattle.
Which is more memorable? Beating Randy Johnson in your first big league game or marrying your wife, Kim?
Oh, my goodness. You're going to make me choose. Now, my wife's sitting right next to me. Beating Randy Johnson was pretty awesome. But you know what? My wife, not even close. She's with me every day. I love her dearly. I actually mean that answer, Colby. I really do.
What was your career ERA?
I do not know, but it's somewhere in the mid fours.
The correct answer is 4.41.
Really? Very nice. That's a little high. How did I play that long?
When you dream at night, what batter are you pitching to?
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe you're asking me this. I had a dream I was pitching last night. I don't know why. I only played 1 year for the Angels, and I usually have a dream that's reoccurring where I'm getting ready to pitch for the Angels, and that is what happened last night, but I didn't have a specific hitter. I go over the lineup with my catcher. I'm ready to go. I get out on the mound, and I wake up, and it's a tough dream. I'd like to stop having it.
All right, this is a funny one. Let's be honest. Did you mean to hit Eddie Perez twice?
I'm going to be 100% honest. I did not. He was my friend. You know what? I just found out a couple years ago, rewatching the tape, that he took a swing at me. So I just interviewed him in the dugout in Florida down in spring training, Cool Today Park. I made him look at me in the eyes. We were live on TV, and I said, "Hey, Eddie, when you took a swing at me, you know what? You missed." And then he tried to take the microphone and say something, but you know what? I was in control. I pulled it away, and we went right back to the game. It was hilarious.
All right, last question.
Yes.
Will you throw the baseball with me today?
Absolutely. Do you know how to throw a two-seamer or just a four-seamer, or you just grab it with all?
Both.
You know all of them?
Not all of them, but two-seamer and four-seamer.
Do you have a changeup?
Yeah.
This guy is a professional. Man. All right, we are going to watch you throw. I'm expecting the heat because you just gave me lightning round. I'm thinking you have a lightning fastball.
Well, we're back with Paul and Kim Bird. You did a good job there, Paul. I don't know if you've ever been interviewed before.
Your son has got a future in the business, let me tell you.
Eight-year-old's going to take your job.
Okay. And it'll be perfect timing, you know, be ready to move on.
He did his homework, man.
He did.
He did his homework.
Yes.
So we're here with Paul and Kim Bird at their farm in Milton, Georgia, and it is gorgeous. It's a gorgeous day, beautiful place here. But we're talking about their marriage and their faith. So, Paul, let's just dive right in. How's your faith protected you? I mean, in the arena of life that you played and served, how's it protected you from some of the snares that so many guys in your profession might be tempted to fall into?
Well, that is a very good question. I do not know, after experiencing a relationship with Jesus, and I don't mean churchianity, I don't mean rules and regulations that people follow, but a actual life-changing relationship with our Creator, meaning talking to Him, listening, experiencing fellowship with that person. And I believe that's what we are designed for. Every single human being, whether they acknowledge it or not, I believe that we are designed, as Pascal would say, a God-shaped hole, a vacuum that only He can fill. And that is what our purpose is. That's what we're designed for. So when we don't have that and we look for a spouse or baseball or money or sex or whatever to give us that completion, that feeling of completion, it just won't work. And so for me, without trying to sound too preachy or going right for the hammer out of the gate, the way that that relationship has helped me is to be in a marriage where she's not my God, and neither is baseball. And after experiencing that, I don't know how anybody else does it. You know, I mean, I think there can be statistics out there, meaning that they're still married, but are they fulfilling a type of marriage that God intended marriage to be? And so my answer would be, it would be hard to do that without the purpose of Christ in their life. So so for me, that kind of thinking, I think, and I don't mean, hey, I've discovered it, I've figured it out, I'm the greatest. God broke me, and I feel that and you know, brought me people in my life that's really helped me realize, I guess, those principles. And I think about that every day, because as you can see, my wife sitting next to me, what a wonderful, sweet woman with a tender heart and very beautiful. I'm way over my skis. I've outpunted my coverage by 25 yards.
I'm with you.
So, yes, you are. And so it's very easy to look to her to give me a feeling of completeness or satisfaction.
Well,
Kim, I've been very interested to talk with you because you've got such a unique perspective on just the pro sport world and being married into this. Did you have any idea what you were getting into?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, how do you really know how to be ready for any marriage? You know, what you're going into. I think I kind of went into it as, you know, this is going to be a baseball adventure, and it kind of prevented me from having the middle step of figuring out what I was going to do and then getting married. I mean, I went out from one roommate to being married to Paul immediately.
Wow.
But I think it was trying to learn a subculture, trying to learn the rules of the game. You know, how do we navigate through being apart? I think that was probably the hardest thing, is that, you know, you get married to be with someone and do life with them, but you're not realizing that half the month they're going to be gone. So I say, you know, we have been married 25 years, but really it feels like half of that, because for 8 months out of the year he was gone.
Wow.
And that drove me a lot to God, because I had to really learn how to depend on God. I mean, I was in a different city without a support group, meeting new wives, new circumstances, new teams, and each place had its own way of doing things. But the constant that I had was God, and I don't know how I would have been able to do that, because we really do enjoy being together. We have a lot of fun together. We do better together. But in that scenario, I think God also designed for us to be apart, and there was great purpose in it.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, if you don't mind, it's really hard to be fully devoted to do two different things. And baseball requires all of you. So a lot of the coaches, the older coaches, are like, you know, baseball and women don't mix. Baseball and a marriage, you're always gone. And so the players don't have options. You know, the players are like, hey, what would you do if you didn't have baseball? But I don't know. Like, we are so sold out. It's so our God. It is so everything for us. And those are usually the players that succeed. So for me to play at that kind of a level with those kind of players, with those kind of just nothing else mentality, and say, you know what, guys, baseball's not number one for me. You know, my relationship with Jesus, and then my marriage is my number one ministry, not my work. To come into that mafia-like lifestyle of baseball and to do a survey and to actually live marriage being number one is a huge challenge.
Yeah, there was a place of us figuring out, how do we have both? Like, how do we, you know, hold both of these things? It's very important for you to have this career, and it is something that you're going to have to be away. But how do we do this well? Because people do it, and they divorce. The divorce rate's 82% while in the game, up to 2 years after retirement.
82%.
I mean, so it's like you hear 50% everywhere, and it's, you know, and it's not. It's so much bigger than that when you look at it just in the baseball piece. And I understand why, because you're basically told, hey, your focus is on how you hit, how you pitch, what you do. This is the priority. And your wife, you know, kind of make her happy, let her buy shoes, let her shop, do whatever she's doing over there. And then you take care of your family financially here. And so that's a real challenge, especially if you want more. And I was committed into more. I did not want to have a marriage that was just blah. I wanted to be past. I wanted to be in that small percentage that not only made it, but we were thriving. I wasn't interested in just, okay, let's get through and have this life and just be able to look at your accolades and be happy. It's like, when you die, no one really cares. I mean, it's great that he does what he's done, but at the end of your life, like we talked earlier, it's like when you are dying, when you are having to care for someone when they're older, they're not pulling out their awards. They're not showing their two-seamer. It's who's there with you in the end. And so I was like, how do we make this work?
Well, that requires, I would think, as a wife, I would think that would require a lot of trust.
Yes.
How did you walk through that?
You know, we had fantastic premarital counseling. So the pastor, Frank Friedman, who was still what I would consider just a spiritual mentor in our lives, we talked about this, because there's a lot of infidelity. There's a lot of pornography. There's with fame, there's money. There's so many things that lure you away. And so I think if you go in, and it's odd because this is an area where my personality type would be like, how do I figure out how to keep everybody safe and make it perfect? But he just kind of said, he's like, you cannot control him. The Holy Spirit leads him and the Holy Spirit leads you. You have to have a healthy relationship. But ultimately, if your goal is to prevent something bad from happening, or Paul's not going to have an affair because I'm going to control this.
That's right.
Then you can't control that. You can only do your part. And so for whatever reason, I mean, we had great boundaries. We did a lot of work in Townsend's boundaries. You know, that book boundaries was huge. So we had some very good just guardrails against our marriage. You know, I didn't have guy friends over on the road. If we had we had some funny situations that would happen in travel ball and different things where it's like, I have to bring the kids and then I'm with another dad, but I don't feel like the dad means anything weird, but I'm in this space, but we were really careful.
Well, because in the business world and most people's life, they don't have those kind of boundaries. They don't even think about it.
Right.
And they accidentally back into something they never intended to back into. So to be preemptive and have those kind of boundaries, it's different to everybody else, but it's such a safeguard for you.
It is.
I was counseling a young man just the other day, and he said, I would never cheat on my wife. And I said, hey, man, you just made a huge mistake. You know, you would cheat on your wife. Everybody would, given the right situation. That's right. And if you are not, you know, humble about it, you will be soon.
We're all 6 seconds from stupid, aren't we?
That's it. That's it.
Yeah. You have, you know, needs that aren't met, different things that are lost that you have to find a way to work together. So we had, you know, so some of those things, you know, with fans and things like that. I mean, there are people writing him letters. There are girls who want to get with him. There are people in hotel rooms that are in the hotel lobby waiting to connect with players. So kind of knowing those things, but just deciding that I wanted to have the kind of relationship that it would be like, why, no offense if you love McDonald's, because I do like McDonald's sometimes too, but why would you go to McDonald's when you can come home and have a meal and is where life
Ruth's
is.
Chris steak.
That's yes, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Not just a meal.
And I don't mean this pridefully, but I actually had a stalker 1 year, but I didn't know I had a stalker because I didn't open all my fan mail.
So after
the season, she informed me, hey.
I was like, this is the same person over and over. But I think just not living in that place, like I just couldn't go to that place of like, if he doesn't answer his phone, I'm going to freak out that something's happened. We have to have a basis of trust. And so we worked hard on that piece. And then we spent time together. Like, this is my best friend. I mean, it's great. People go on girls trips, nothing wrong with that. But it's hard for me. I love being with him.
Mm-hmm. How did you... Well, I want to say this first. Our pastor tells a story of a friend. We were talking about the affair thing. And he, his friend went ahead and wrote a letter out to his kids, each of his kids and his wife, telling, he had never had an affair, but he preemptively wrote this letter to them, telling them that he had had an affair.
Oh, wow.
And the choices that he had made. And he told his wife he did this, so in case she found it one day.
Yeah, I'm nervous right now.
Don't die before you tell her.
But he kept it, and he hung on to it. Mm. And he said occasionally I would go back and read it.
That's
just
really
to
cool.
let myself, remind myself what's at stake if I ever do something stupid.
Wow.
Because we're all a step away.
Mm-hmm. Satan never tempts you with the consequences.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ever.
No, you're right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
How did you, because I think a lot of people listening, you know, if you're in the business world, you travel, maybe not quite 8 months out of the year, but you might travel. You know, I had a brother that used to travel and he was gone 3 or 4 days a week. And a lot of people have to do that. How did you stay connected when you were traveling or when you were on the road or when you were apart? How'd you do that?
I mean, we made really conscious choices. Back then, we didn't have the internet. I mean, FaceTime, or was it not FaceTime, but Skype was at the very end of his career, which was really, really good because we could talk to each other and see each other. But we had high phone bills and we talked on the phone. We always kept each other, you know, we talked about everything that was going on in our lives. Mm. I mean, and he was the person I wanted to talk to about it. I mean, I have girlfriends and I have other people that I can go to, but I wanted him to be the first to know things going on. The other thing that we were really adamant about was our boys, we took them out of school in spring training. So in February, we always went down with him for the season. We had a tutor that traveled with us. They did homeschool from February until May. Mm. And then we lived together in the summer. And then we always came back in August with the boys once they started school, just because it's hard to be the new kids. But we didn't spend more than 2 weeks apart. Mm. So if it meant that he had like a 24-hour period to fly in to see us for an off day, we did it. And we would go visit him. But we just...
Intentional.
We had to be intentional. Because I felt like at 2 weeks, something in me would creep up that was like very independent. Like, I can do this myself. Mm. I can do it myself, you know?
Yeah,
and I was like, I don't like that person. Because she's almost like submerging all of her desires and needs and wants and pains and just is kind of handling it and white-knuckling it. And that was about 2 weeks. I would notice that kind of start to take over.
Mm. And we never saw any older people, because I think there's so much value in looking at the future. We never saw anybody that lived two separate lives that made it.
Mm.
Not only had a great marriage, but made it. And as you know, my wife indicated, we wanted to not just be in the 18% that made it, but have a dynamic marriage. And that's really hard to do when you live two separate lives, even though you have the phone. One thing that I had to learn as a man, and I don't mean this chauvinistically, was just how to talk.
Mm-hmm.
She, my wife, is a psychology graduate and is an expert in communication, talking. And I was not. I didn't grow up in a family where my father expressed his emotions. So me coming home saying, you know, hey, my day was good, didn't fly. Yeah, I made a huge mistake in spring training one year. I was exhausted.
This is a true story.
I came home and all this, and she's like, you know, we're down in spring training. I'm with the Indians.
Newlyweds.
Yeah, and the year before, I'm courting her, so, you know, we're going to Disney World. We're doing all these things, and we get Fernando Montes, a new strength and conditioning coach, and bottom line, we're training for the triathlon now. And it was totally different. So I come home and I am exhausted. And she's like, when are we going to Disney? When are we going to Disney? And I'm like, man, I'm please just give me, you know, I'm just, you know, she's like, well, what are you going to do? Where can we go over here? We go to the mall, we go walk this and that. And I'm like, let's play a game. Let's play the quiet game. The first one that talks loses. And a minute as a joke, but it just came out wrong.
Wasn't a good
too.
Joke.
No.
It wasn't a good joke. I thought it was.
Kim, I don't understand. Pretty, that's funny. You didn't.
I don't know what it was that I called my mom later and go, I don't think I can do this.
She's like, what happened to the guy who romanced me? And I had to apologize and everything like that. But it's funny, when you say something really stupid year one of your marriage, you still pay for it in year 26. So,
now I'm like, can you play the quiet game?
Yeah.
I really like to.
So bottom line, she would never let me play the quiet game throughout baseball. And it wasn't just long conversations. It was more of, tell me where you're at. Like, I had to dive in and do my work and say, what am I feeling? And I think there is this thing biblically of knowing, not just physical intimacy, but knowing a person. And for me, it required much more work to really say, here's where I'm at, here's what I'm going through. And I think when we did that, that built connection despite being away.
Well, living that and being married and living through that, and then seeing all of these other players and wives just falling apart, I can only imagine what kind of heart that developed in you for other marriages. Can you talk a little bit about that? I know you studied some of this.
Yeah, you just start seeing people fall by the wayside. I mean, we have another friend, same thing, just gone through a divorce. And some of these people are strong Christians that
good
we were in
people,
Bible
huh?
study with. And you just realize, I mean, I think we always kind of tease Paul, but it's not really a joke. But like when somebody that he knows, if we have a couple that goes through a divorce, I was like, I can ask you for whatever I want. Because there's this window of like panic that comes over him because he's like, this is possible. Am I? And we would kind of take stock and be like, kind of step back and go, are we in a good place?
Where, if this it can happen to them.
Right.
Exactly.
These
are,
right.
Yes. These are my Christian brothers who I would say, you know, arrogantly, oh, it'll never happen to them. They have a great thing going. But it's like you said, the minute you let your guard down, crazy things happen.
Yeah. People aren't, you know, engaging in that inner world or figuring out what's going on with them. And what we noticed a big pattern was that I just was like, I'm not going to bow down to that piece of the culture was wait till the season's over. Mm-hmm. We'll work on it when the season's over. Don't upset Paul. He's getting ready to pitch. It might affect his game. I mean, you're really literally taught that. Like, don't bring up these things now. Wait till later. So later becomes, well, he had a good game. Should I bring it up now? Well, I don't want to ruin that. Well, he had a bad game. Oh, that might have been my fault because I brought it up. So you become kind of an over-functioning codependent in a way of like everything is around that career. Don't upset the pitcher. Don't upset the hitter. They're in a hitting streak. When is a good time? Mm-hmm. And so we had to learn early on. It's like we cannot wait 8 months and then talk about a problem. Because if we do, it's going to be nuclear. We have to work through stuff. And again, there's a sensitivity of it. We're driving to the ballpark and he has a big game. And I'm like, I want to fight about how you handled. I mean, there's an appropriateness to it, but you can't wait all the time.
Yeah. But even then I would say this, I learned from a, you know, Hall of Fame pitcher at an early age. And this is really intense, but at arbitration, each win is worth $500,000.
Wow.
Meaning if you're a 20-game winner, when I played, they would easily pay you $10 million a year. So you think incorrectly, okay, when I'm out on the field, if I win this game, it means a lot more for my family. And so his point was you need to have a clear head when you take the mound and be focused. So why would you get in a fight on the way to the park or the
so
night
much
before?
Of your game is mental and emotional.
Yeah.
And so
– but the reality is money's not your God. It's not number one. It doesn't make you happy, but you can fall into that of, oh, I'm going to provide for my family, so I've got it, you know, and then you start to stuff things and not be real. And can it just wait till afterwards, which is a message to her that baseball is number one.
That's right. Yeah.
And so she became very gracious at realizing, okay, his job is important. And then I think I became better at saying, hey, if we need to get something out, it's okay. Mm-hmm. If you need to call me, you know, not in between innings, but, you know, that day, and there's something really wrong, let's talk about it. Let's get it out.
Well, and it's like that whole idea of going down the road of, like, if you get divorced, you're going to lose half of that arbitration money. You know, like, I mean.
Coaches would say that. Yeah, it's so hilarious.
Right, well, say goodbye to that. I mean, you know. Yeah. Well, and also, I think being healthy at home, you know, the game ends. I mean, we watched people blow their arms out, lose their money, lose their spot, lose their position. And there was a pastor, and I wish I could remember his name. And if he ever hears this, I'm going to find out your name, because I just, he said this. We have a conference that we've been involved in this, and it's once a year. It's Pro Athletes Outreach, and they do it in different parts of the country, and it's a 4-day conference usually, and it's with major league or minor league players. They have panels and topics, and it's a way to kind of have a place where, you know, as Christians, you can kind of deal with all the struggles you're going to have in baseball and supporting your marriage and encouraging you. It's just, it's huge. And it's then great. When you get traded, you might have met someone at the conference that's on your new team. Mm. And one of the speakers a couple years back said, you know, marriage is like a train ride. You know, you only ride with Jesus and your wife till the end. People get on and off.
That's
so make
really
sure,
good.
Make sure you remember who you're riding with. And I've thought about that so much and how true that is, because in the thick of it, when fame is really good and when the money's coming in and it's rolling in and you're having this great time and you think you have all of these friends, in 1 second when you blow your arm out or you're released from a team, it's interesting how quiet your phone can get.
Wow.
But your wife's there stretching your arm out and, you know, and they're with you. So there's this piece of reminding yourself what's important long term.
Wow.
Your kids get on and off that
train.
They do. That's
right. And you had two boys through all this.
That's
it. Little ones you're raising and bringing along for this journey.
And that was challenging, because I think right at, you know, when they were little, it was hard. I mean, our oldest son now, who's 23, there was a time where he would cry and at the window when Paul went to the field. I mean, we played in Atlanta, and he would run and chase the car and cry. And one day asked Paul, you know, Dad, like, do you have toys with your other family? Because
asked me, does your other family have as good a toys as we have?
Oh, my word.
It's
hard. Yeah, I think he learned from watching Barney, you know, they were trying to spin a divorce in a positive way that some people have two families, which is even better than one.
So he
just assumed I had another family, so.
Where would you go? Why would you leave? So it was hard to manage that. And I think when they were younger, you know, your mom is sort of the primary person to kind of hold the household together, and at least in our family, our experience. And I did. I took that really serious, because I felt like there's one parent. He's going to be gone. I've got to be on all the time. But then as our boys were 12 and 13, there's only, for me, I believe there's only so much I can teach a man. Mm. It's different.
Yes.
So we needed to really look at that. And so that was part of the reason for him to step out. You know, he had job offers and we could have kept going and going, but it was like, okay, honey, like, you're going to keep going. And if you quit baseball when the kids are 20, you have missed so much. And are you sure that that's the greater thing? If you feel led to do it, fine, but I'm feeling very stretched then. And there's certain things as a man that I want them to hear from a man. I just do.
Yeah. So, how old were they when you stopped playing?
So my last year was 2008, and you know, my oldest was 12, and you know, Colby 10. But she looked at me, I had three contracts on the table, and she said, what is the point of money if you miss your kids grow up?
Wow.
And it was really powerful to me, and she said, I don't think I can follow you anymore. And
we'd hit that point, like, our kids were, Grayson was growing in his own baseball piece, they had friends. You know, your kids, they have to have other people. They can't just be with mom and dad all the time. And so there is a place in that where you want to honor their life as well. And I just felt like I can't even keep up with the math. And how many, you know, we can't keep pulling them out of school in seventh grade. This is beyond. And I'm just not a homeschooler. So it's like my kids would have learned much if we did it. And I recognize that. That's a limitation. Some people do it beautifully. Awesome. That's not within my wheelhouse. Yeah.
It's amazing, you know, you saying that. We had heard not too long ago that one of God's purpose in giving men wives, godly wives, is to draw us back to his purpose.
To channel their masculinity.
Channel our masculinity, mm-hmm. where men given to our own measures would just go out and try to display our masculinity in unhealthy manners. But God gives us godly wives to channel that back in. And it sounds like that's what, not that you were doing that in unhealthy manners, but he channeled you back to your true calling, which is your house, yeah. you know, and she helped you refocus back into, you know, and just kind of bring it. I love that. I love that story.
Well, something you said too, that is, you said that Kim was gracious in the word, that just having grace with each other.
Yeah.
It goes both ways. And the way that she had grace with you in that season and that you had grace with her as she's trying to navigate all this.
Mm-hmm. We did a lot of, that was the other piece. We had to really work through that because there's this sort of mindset that you have. If you're there's this idea of being left and the person leaving. I had to struggle a lot with resentment at times because he's leaving and he's staying like in a 4-star resort, you know, and getting room service at 1 in the morning. And I'm like, we're eating cereal and we're doing homework and their kids aren't listening to me. Yeah. And so there was a lot of, I call it a dance. I mean, there was a lot of dance and a lot of, you know, we went to therapy and had to talk with people and say, okay, how do we do this? Because I'm struggling. And I look back now, it's interesting because you go through seasons and when you're in it, so many times you have such a framework. But that as time has gone on, I look back and think, you know, along the way, there were ways that I could have made sure that I did some self-care a little bit better than I did and advocated better for that. Like, I really need this right now in this space. And how do we do it?
Yeah. Tell us about Birdhouse Ministries.
Oh, it's a long time coming. It's such an interesting story. So we've always really had a heart for people. And in fact, there was a point where Paul and I asked him if he wanted to quit baseball right before he got called up to the big leagues. We had a desire to be counselors and take people through marriage, you know, healing and be able to make people have better functional marriages and families. And we had looked into doing that. And he told me graciously that he felt like God had a call on his life and he was supposed to play baseball and I needed to trust that plan. And but we've had this heart for healthiness, for wholeness, you know, for people to be physically, emotionally, spiritually healthy, you know, just to see people thriving is one of my greatest desires. And I know one of Paul's. And we tried to do this in several different ways by having different places for retreats. And he kept saying that there's supposed to be this place. There's supposed to be this place. And I'm not visionary. And so I'm more of an implementer. And I couldn't see that place because we were in the middle of 2 toddlers and baseball.
Well, I'm seeing it and it's gorgeous.
It's my phrase that I'm going to coin is it's too God to be true, you know?
Yeah, that's good.
And so you know, we ended up having different locations. We had a lake house. We had a camp out in Tennessee. Those fell through. And we moved to a farm. Paul had a desire to have chickens, and we moved to a farm with our boys graduated. And had a friend that we played baseball, knew from baseball circles in that ministry that had horses. And she asked if she could board horses, if we had horses on our property. Now, we had a full barn with 4 stalls and no horses. And we said, yeah, well, you know, you can do your equine therapy program off of our property. And in the middle of that, we were able to acquire a property right next to us that allowed us to have a space for people to come. So what we do here is we have regular therapy where people can come in and talk to a Christian counselors. We have 2 counselors that work their practices out of the property. And it's a cabin, 6 acres in Milton. But then the other piece that we're really known for is trauma-focused equine therapy. Mm. I had no idea I was an animal lover. I think until later in my life with God, I didn't know that was a huge avenue for him to really speak to my heart and heal my heart, was being around horses and chickens and cats and dogs.
So you had never been around horses before then?
None of which you can bring on the road in major league baseball.
Just a horse doesn't
they
work
frown
well
upon
on
that.
The team plane. Yeah, Paul, you know, he was from Kentucky, so he had been around horses, but I was deathly afraid. I when the horses came to live on our property, I didn't even talk. I was scared of them. Didn't really know what to make of them. But what we do is we obviously the horse is not the healer. We believe God's the healer, but God has given horses brains that are stacked very similar to ours. And so they are animals that are constantly fearful that they're going to be preyed upon. And so when they get fearful, just like us, they live in their monkey brain or their brainstem, and they get really scared. And trying to get them to have healthy attachments and healthy relationships is what helps the brain heal. And we believe trauma, I mean, what the research shows is that trauma is healed in relationship. Mm. And so horses, you know, we have some horses that have been rescued and some have been broken, and they are healed. As the clients work with them, they learn healthy relationships and healthy dynamics.
It's phenomenal. No, I ambushed you, okay?
Yep.
I did not ask for your permission first.
Okay.
I took a picture of you affirming your son Colby on the couch, for those of you listening. He is just sitting there looking. You were talking about him, how proud you are. Mom's sitting on with a very doting face, and he's soaking this up, and you are giving him something that he needs, you know, validation as a dad, which we know we need from our Heavenly Father as well. Wow. The people that validated me in my life, you know, it was my dad at times, and it was athletically. We had a connection. He would take me to Churchill Downs and taught me how to gamble at an early age. So I'm putting $2 on old Betsy coming around the corner, and the heart rate's through the roof, you know. And it was a connection that we had. And then I had a brother, Mike, who was a Marine, and he took me camping. And taught me how to pitch a tent, how to start a fire, and when it rains, how to keep the fire going, which includes motor oil, you know. And he taught me how to ride horses, and it was really awesome. And so I've lost both of them. And the horses have really helped me, because here I am thinking arrogantly, we're starting a ministry to help other people. And I'm out in the pasture after broadcasting in dress shoes with my Fox Sports shirt on, and there was a retired racehorse named Abel who has got his mouth over my forearm, and he's just holding it, and I'm talking about the pain of losing my father. I've realized through experiences like that that I am the one that is in therapy, and it's okay. And even my youngest son, who I wrote, you mentioned the book earlier, which was very kind of you, where we have been disconnected because my oldest, Grayson, who we've talked about, is such a athletically gifted baseball player now playing for the Cubs. My younger son had no desire to play baseball. He's hoops and soccer, and really sports is just okay, you know?
Yeah.
And so there was this feeling of, unlike your son sitting on the couch, there's this feeling of a wounding because my dad likes my brother better.
Oh, wow.
And I have learned how to connect with Colby through dealing with the horses and learning principles of connection that have helped me talk to Colby. And so for the last couple years, you know, I don't know if this has helped you or not, but Colby's like become my best friend, you know, and I go, visit him. And I've learned that through riding a huge 19 hand horse named Max. And I had to get permission.
That's a big horse.
Yeah, I had to get permission to ride him from the horse. Horses will let you know. And so I had to wait for him to scoot his hind end against the podium, allow me to get on, go through the woods through dynamic connection. So I had to learn to go visit my son, Colby, and not give him a speech, an answer without a question, tell him to stop playing video games, worry about his grades, and I've had to release all that and just simply work on connection. And the first time I did that, he asked me, he said, this is going to make me emotional, but he said, hey, Dad, you know, after spending the day with him, he said, would you stay? And I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, if you stay the night, he goes, you can sleep in my bed and I'll sleep on the ground, whatever. He goes, but I don't have class till 11 the next morning. We can go out to breakfast. And I couldn't because my wife had surgery and I had to get back. But I got in my truck and I just started weeping driving back. And I said, Father, please don't let it be too late.
Wow.
And it hasn't been. God doesn't mess around. He can step out of time. He can repair. He can. He is just so dynamic and wonderful and cares so much about us. And so I have prayed for a good relationship with my younger son, and I'm just now experiencing that, and I owe a lot of that to my wife for work with the ministry on me, the horses, God's timing, all of it. And he is a phenomenal son who I'm very, very proud of. And you know, I've told him at times, you know, I've struggled in expressing that, and he's admitted that he's had a broken receiver. Wow. At times, and it's been hard for him to receive that because we're stuck with, I'm a baseball player, yeah. oldest son, a baseball player, and there was this feeling of I'm not as important as him.
And we let those, and you even hit this in your book, you know, our identity is, it's not in what we do. It's it's in, I'm a child of the King.
Yes.
And I'm a child of the King, and we were built, like you said, we were built for relationship and that connection. It's so funny, when our kids are little and then they're teenagers, we spend all of our time telling them to, making sure their room's clean and making sure yes. their goods, grades are good, yes. making sure they're not, you know, that they've got good work ethic. And what do we usually forget to do? Make that heart connection.
Yes.
But
That's
when
it.
They're out of the house and when they're adults, what keeps that relationship going? It ain't the clean room.
Well, and
it's
ahead,
the heart
sorry.
Connection, yeah.
You're absolutely right. I'm so excited. I'm jumping in. I apologize for that.
Do it.
That's what we call on the ranch being task-oriented mm-hmm. versus connection-oriented. Mm-hmm. So we're, you know, a lot of equine therapy places, and they do great work too. We're just different. So where we are different is, you know, when we would take a horse for a walk, you wouldn't just put the halter on the nose of the horse and drag the horse and tell the horse where to go and mistake that as being confident. You're really actually learning to control a horse. And when you dominate or control a 1,600-pound horse, you know, a 12-year-old feels like, oh, okay, well, you know, and so then they take those principles into the relationship and try to control or force or lead when they're not being asked to. So where we are different in that, you would have to show the horse the halter. Mm-hmm. He would have to put his nose in the halter. And then during your walk, you would go where the horse wants to go and where you want to go, 50-50. Connection, bonding, and that's where we are different. And that is what I had to learn as a father. I was so task oriented. And there are times where, you know, the house on fire, you know, I mean, there's times where it's, hey, like, son, this is unacceptable. Let me tell you why. Yeah. But even then, instruction from a place of connection versus task, hey, get in line.
Yeah.
I'm the sergeant running the show. That's my title in the family. That does not work. And connective relationships that are healthy.
I love that instruction from the place of connection.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So
well,
great.
And to your point, the issue with, you know, the idea of when they get older, the difference between when your kids live under your roof and are totally dependent on you versus when they're older is choice.
Mm.
They can choose to come back or not. They can choose to call you or not. And so we really do, the ministry is really run with the horses having choice, which sounds so bizarre. But if you really think about real love relationships, even with God, are based on choice.
Mm.
If you don't choose the other person and you're forced and you have to stay married, that's not choice. I choose. And we give our choice away so much. And so for me, it was different with, you know, the task versus the connection piece. Was a really, you know, that whole piece I was talking about, how do you integrate these things together? Because you have to get things done and you can do it with connection. So if you have those two pieces together, that's sort of the secret place of like, we can do this together. We can clean the house. It has to be done, but we can do it in a way that is choice and we want to do it because we're honoring where we live.
Mm-hmm.
The horses taught me, you know, the peace of God where it's like, hey, I want to know your heart and I want you to choose relationship. So as I worked with the horses and was down with them and just working with Lauren Startup, who's, you know, the equine specialist that we partner with, I just noticed God was starting to wake up parts of me and say, how many parts of you do you live like a trail horse who doesn't get a choice, that rides the same road every day with a really strong bit, without a choice, and you're not really riding with me? You're just obedient to a place of almost scared. I wasn't really freely obedient. It was like, I'm terrified of not obeying. I'm terrified of having a voice, of asking for what I would really want versus what I'm thinking that you want me to pray about, how you want me to be. And so the horses, as I started working with them and realizing they have a choice to connect with us, we have a choice to take them on a walk. And I've only ridden one of our horses once. So we have to build relationship. A ride on a horse comes after connection.
Wow.
It's a lot like marriage with sex, with relationships. If you haven't done all of the work leading up, you want to be the most intimate without doing any of the work. And that there's something about that. That's not a heart connection.
That's right.
So with the horses, it's the same way. And it started to unravel me. So before we even opened the place here, I would find myself with the horses and I was just, God was waking up places in me to say, like, I want you to choose me. And I don't want you to choose me out of fear. I want you to choose me because you know me and because we're going to go on a walk together. And it's not about me dragging you and pulling you or forcing you. It's about us doing this thing together. And that was like, okay, this is huge. And this can help, you know, from a biological standpoint, scientifically. I mean, the brain is so locked up, and you're unlocking places of the brain using horse therapy and being out in nature that you can't. An experience is different than telling you. I can tell you I like you, but it's not until we have coffee and we spend time together and you really know.
Yeah.
And that's what we're allowed to do with the horse therapy. And so we wanted more of it. So we were open to it, and just like, how do we have more? We see clients coming on our property and they're doing horse therapy. I know the horses are messing up my interior world and we wanted more. And so this place came available, and God, through just so many different circumstances, provided for the ministry to have a space. It was a ministry that people could donate, and we would just donated the money that came in to nonprofits that were Christian, athletic, or children based. Mm-hmm. But this allowed us to have a space.
So good.
Just to see your hearts for ministry, for the Lord, walking faithfully with the Lord, and to see your hearts for each other through what would seem like a crazy life, a crazy career, but that you're still walking side by side. And I know no marriage is perfect, but that you're doing this together and that you're seeking the Lord in the process is so encouraging.
Yep. Whether it's a baseball field, whether it's the diamond, the dugout, or whether it's horses, you're doing ministry. And it's funny because when we seek to do ministry with other people, the greater ministry always happens in our heart, I think, as we do it. And I think that's what we've seen and what we've heard. So.
And it's not without manure.
It's exactly right.
You know what I'm saying?
That's exactly right.
You expect some of that.
Yeah.
Well, we say the marriage is an adventure, and you guys have been on the highs, you've been on the lows. And it's the whole process. And, man, it's been a joy, to talk with you guys. But as my 8-year-old looks in the window here, he's wanting you to fulfill your promise
you've
to him.
Oh, you've got to throw a catch.
Thank y'all.
The gloves.
Thank
We're ready
you for
to go.
Having
Thank
us.
Y'all so much
Thank
for being on the
so
podcast
much.
Today.
Well, I would say to our listeners, if you have not read this book, Free Bird, it's an amazing book. I had not seen it before and listened to it on my drive recently, and it's incredible. Just
powerful.
Very powerful. So pick that up. Is there any way that we can keep up with you guys that we want to tell our listeners?
Oh, absolutely. We have a website, which is Birdhouse Ministries, and it's BYRD, birdhouseministries.com. You can sign up for, newsletters. We do have events and volunteer days, and, we hope to expand and have some contemplative things and retreats that people can come and rest. And definitely we'll have workshops in the future where people can come and interact with horses.
So great. Well, thank you all again for your
Thanks
time.
Thanks for having
it's been
us.
So good. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast. Then head on over to Facebook and Instagram and give us a follow. Have a great week.